Good morning, honorable members. The chairperson is not here today. In France, attending the SAEU IPM. So I'll be facilitating the election of the acting chair as guided by Rule 129 of the NA rules. May I please have a nomination of the acting chair? Honorable Maluleka.
Thank you. I would like to nominate the name of Ken Sani as an acting chair for today.
Okay. Any other nominations?
No.
Okay. Thank you very much. Congratulations. You can come forward.
Thank you very much. Good morning, honorable members. While holding the fort, thank you very much. I hope we will do justice to the process and assist the committee as the general chair. Our agenda will definitely have to be adjusted, I think. We had many speculators as well. Honorable members, I'm just highlighted. As per the agenda, we are going to receive a briefing on the analysis of the annual report to be led by the content advisor. She has circulated her document for all of us to see, and then we'll also receive an analysis from Ms. Leslie Mercer. We were expecting to have the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation alerted that they have apologized they would not be here. The process that has been put together is to say, well, first, it's sort of a pre-meeting today in preparation for next week. We're doing the analysis, getting the perspective so that we can prepare ourselves for next week when we meet with the department in what needs to, as we analyze the annual report. So that's why I thought, let me just highlight that the word document circulated, I think the other ones would be looked at later. But just to start, I think we'll allow Ms. Leslie Mostert to start. She's from IGG, I think. She's been invited to come through IGG. I can't see the handwriting. I'm out.
Thank you, Honorable Dr. Person. Dr. Leslie Mercer completed her PhD at the University of Leicester with an undergraduate studies at the University of Pretoria. She's currently a senior researcher at the Institute of Global Dialogue, IDD, responsible for the management of projects on South African foreign policy, diplomacy, as well as research on natural resource governance in international affairs. So we welcome Dr. Leslie Mercer.
Okay. I think I'm going to need to sit to stay near the microphone, but I'll face this way so I can see everybody. Good morning to everybody. Thank you very much for the invitation to join you today. What I'm going to try and do is to go through this rather large and quite weighty question on hand luggage allowance from DIRCO. The annual report has just come out, 2012 to 2013, the annual report. So I am from the Institute for Global Dialogue, and we are a NGO, a research organization think tank based, and our focus is on diplomacy and foreign policy. So that is our particular niche area we focus on. We're also associated with UNISA. So we have one foot in academia and one foot in the policy environment. And we like to think that we can act or facilitate, be a bridge between the two in translating one world to the other, as it were. So I think before going into the details of the report set out from the beginning a couple of key changes, key changing the environment in which this document is situated in, and highlighting a couple of things that we need to take into consideration. The first is we must remember South Africa, even though we're coming up to our 20 years of democracy, democracy is a process, not a destination. And it's continuously a struggle to make sure if you're struggling, then we know democracy is working. So we are a consolidating democracy. We are working hard, but it does present challenges. Compared to many more established democracies, it's 20 years is not a long time. So we are still learning. We are still in the process of educating ourselves and how things work, how what works best. So this informs a lot of our thinking as we go. And this is one of the reasons that the IGD initially came into existence. It was at 1994, with the transition to democracy, the Mandela government, the Mandela realized that there was no thinking, no greater strategic thinking on international relations and where we should be going. So the Institute for Global Dialogue was formed, originally as a foundation, which later became the Institute, to help with the strategic thinking and positioning of South Africa in the world. In terms of changing geopolitical dynamics, lots of talk, a lot of focus, especially within the academic community, policy communities, on the rise of emerging powers. There's been some talk of the decline of US, although it's, many people argue it's only relative decline compared to what. So there's a lot of geopolitical changes. We've seen that the transitions in the north of Africa and the Middle East, the challenges of Syria, the role of emerging powers like BRICS, and how this pattern is changing, what does it mean for international relations. And the other area that has really come to the fore is the transnational challenges. And we're all facing the financial crisis is showing its impact more and more on South Africa, from trade to economics to development issues. Questions of climate change, the drought, health, agriculture, all these areas and issues that are clearly, they cannot be solved by one country alone. So we have to partake internationally to address these challenges. So that's the context in which the annual report has been positioned. There's a couple of key themes that South Africa's foreign policy is now focused on. We have, from our 1996 discussion document, it's been fairly consistent, our approach. If you look at the underlying principles and key cornerstones, it has, in the main, stayed the same. But under the last four years, there's been a consolidation into these key areas that I put up here behind you. The first focus is the African agenda, with a particular focus on Southern Africa, SADC, and regional integration. The other area, South-South, strengthening South-South relations. And this is, again, in response to the geopolitical environment changes that I pointed out, that we're looking at relations with countries in Latin America, South America, Asia, India, to strengthen these, and also in response to our transnational challenges, the financial challenge. We've got to look out for the market. We've got to work with partners of the South to push through agenda items on the United Nations. So there's been a particular focus on South-South relations, strengthen North-South relations. And this has actually come out more during President Zuma's administration than it was during Mbeki and Mandela's administration, the focus on North-South relations, maintaining it. There was a bit of a challenge by the EU representative, I think, earlier this year, who who was a bit worried that South Africa's focus had changed, and there's been quite a lot of effort subsequent to that to demonstrate we are still engaged with our northern partners. It's just our focus has been moved towards the south because that's where we're building our relationships. Participation in the global system of governance. This is again looking at questions of United Nations, International Monetary Fund, all these organizations that broadly govern different areas, whether it's nuclear non-proliferation, to groupings such as the NAM, the OECD, the World Trade Organization, global governance, and how, where does South Africa fit? What do we want to do in this global system? And then finally, strengthening political and economic relations. So these are the four or five areas that the annual report speaks to. And what it does, it presents all the achievements that it's been done. So I've gone through and I've summarized each one, and I'm going to go through it now. So start with the African agenda. What has, in the last year, South Africa's focus been, and what have they achieved? And there's a couple of points here. There's been a lot of focus on regional integration, and that included looking at SADC, the tripartite free trade area. That is SADC, COMESA, and ECOWAS, bringing these trade regions together. There's one of the big challenges economically, development-wise, climate change-wise, is the lack of working together within regions. So this is what South Africa's focus has been. And there was an interesting statistic pointed out at a conference last week in political science and economics of Africa. And they brought up a graph that shows that Africa's percentage share of trade in the worldwide exports, percentage export share worldwide, has actually decreased since 1974, which is a worrying factor. And something that we should be focusing on. So there's been a lot of, in trying to address bringing together regions, working together, one of the key identified areas has been our infrastructure development so that we can move things by road, by ports, by rail. And the Durko report points out the Presidential Infrastructure Champion Initiative in pursuing infrastructure development. There's been a focus on the role of the AU, and we have Dr. Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma, who was appointed chairperson of the AU, and South Africa really pushed this position. There was a lot of sort of uneasiness from other representatives from other African countries. They were sure that there was an unspoken rule, only small states should apply. But South Africa has pushed for this and has achieved this and is driving the role of the AU. And I think it just shows the seriousness that South Africa has given to the AU as an organization in bringing together the African countries and focus on integration. And linked to that is NEPAD, which is the socio-economic development platform linked to the AU. You'll see in the reports that another area that shows that the importance of Africa has been the strengthening of the African multilateral branch. To focus on SADC, to focus on the AU. There's continued commitment to the HRM, and South Africa has also contributed significantly to the peace, security, and stability of Africa. And it presents, it outlines the troops that we have in various positions across the African continent. And then also shows, and we'll come to BRICS later as part of the South-South agenda, but it also under that, the theme of BRICS was about linking BRICS and African development and infrastructure. And after the BRICS meeting, they held an Africa dialogue forum where members, heads of state from Africa were invited. And again, showing that the administration's real focus and seriousness that it has given the African agenda, pursuing it. So strengthening South-South relations, the report showing it highlights our hosting of the BRICS summit, where a lot of achievements were made in terms of discussing the development, well, the creation of the Development Bank. There was a business council created and a think tank council, which is currently being incubated by the HSRC. And we are already, from think tank perspective, we're already putting together our panels for next year's BRICS think tank discussions in Rio. We are doing sort of a trial run. We have to have our presentations ready by December so that we can have a trial run with DICO, and then we take it to the think tanks forum in Rio next year March. There's been, there could be more made of IBSA. It was IBSA's 10 years. This is the India, Brazil, South Africa trilateral forum. It's the 10 years anniversary this year. In contrast, BRICS, IBSA actually has a secretariat and has various bodies that focus on questions from education to health and development. It has an IBSA development fund, which is functional, supporting South relations. Most of the money goes to countries in Africa. There was a close session on IBSA hosted by DIRCO, and the IGD is hosting one at the end of this month, but the momentum behind it in South Africa has seemed to have somewhat waned on IBSA. Again, we're working with our NAM partners, the non-aligned movement partners, in the Global Governance Forum, whether it's the United Nations or in OECD on questions of aid effectiveness, development cooperation, climate change. South Africa will have a position. This thing goes with Africa. There's a discussion on the Africa position, and then there's discussions that bring it in the non-aligned movement position. And a government official said, yeah, what starts off as a South African position, people question what happened to it in the long run, and this is because it becomes somewhat watered down by the time you've taken it to the Africa position, the non-aligned member position, South cooperation position. But it's, in terms of global governance and repositioning it, the South-South relations is key in getting that partnership right, that between North countries and South countries, that they no longer dictate policies and procedures. And you'll see when it comes to development and aid, because of the South-South relations and because of South Africa's role in development cooperation negotiations, along with India, Brazil, and China, the word aid is slowly being phased out with a very negative connotation, and it's been development cooperation, development partnership has been phased in. So there's this whole change, the language is changing, which affects the thinking and the focus of elements of it. And this is because of South-South relations. We also achieved a forum on China-Africa cooperation this year, which is between the African Union and China on questions of economic development cooperation. Now, this was a little bit short in the report, and probably because our focus has been elsewhere internationally, that we are continuing relations with the North. But in the report, actually, really only focuses on strategic dialogue with the EU. And there's been a couple of high-level meetings recently between South Africa and the EU, a lot to do with trade and development areas. When it comes to participation in the global system of governance, what has South Africa achieved during this period? And the first one is at the UN. The fact that we were elected for two terms on the UN Security Council as elected members quite quickly and quite close together shows that internationally we still have a presence. People still recognize South Africa and the role that we can play on behalf of Africa, even though our position as the voice of Africa is challenged. It's not that we can say we are the voice of Africa, but then it's a continent of 54 very different states. So very different competing positions. At the UN this year, we completed, at the end of last year, the second term as a non-permanent member of the United Nations Security Council. And South Africa pushed during both terms the linkages between the UN Security Council and the African Union Peace and Security Council. And eventually, during our tenure there, we managed to push Resolution 2033, which was a big breakthrough for South Africa at the UN. And that means that Resolution 2033 codifies the relationship or the working between the Peace and Security Council of the African Union and the Security Council of the UN, which is key because a lot of the issues on the UN agenda are African. So there needs to be this relationship. There needs to be more focus now on we have resolutions, what are we going to do with it? How is it going to be monitored, evaluated, implemented? But it was a key breakthrough for South Africa that we managed under our term to get this resolution passed. We've contributed a lot to negotiations on disarmament, non-proliferation, and arms control, which is discussed in the agenda in the annual review. And then Rio 20, this is sustainable development. South Africa was a key member negotiating because, of course, we hosted the 2002 World Summit on Sustainable Development and the Johannesburg Action Plan. And we took that to Rio and said, but don't forget this. We're not starting anew. The Joburg Plan Action must be integrated in Rio Plus 20. So South Africa played quite a key part in Rio, and as well as the Conference of the Parties 17-18, that's the climate change negotiations, where we actually hosted COP17 in Durban, and were chair of that United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change for that period up leading to Doha end of last year. We were also part of the G20 and the negotiations there, and that highlighted. And finally, the report goes into strengthening of political and economic relations. And you can see there the whole list of areas and fields that South Africa has been engaged in politically and developing trade, economic cooperation, bilateral, binational commissions. There's a whole list there, and you can go through. I mean, Southern Africa talk about engagement with Lesotho, Malawi, what we did in Mozambique, and it goes through each of the regions. And that is fairly straightforward in the report. But what I've done is it's a very obviously it's the annual report that's showing you all the outcomes and achievements. So I've been through it and taken those points and highlighted areas which maybe could have more attention. In terms of the institution itself, the annual report shows that we now have 125 missions with a lot of missions focused on Africa. We have an economic diplomacy training program, and during the course of the year, over 1,800 officials were trained, not only South African officials, but from Africa as well. And in particular, I can think of the representatives from South Sudan who were actually trained with MISA. So we are engaged in training. So what I've done, sorry, it's a little bit small now. I don't know if you can read it up there, is take each of those items and say, okay, those are the achievements, but where are those underlying, those little niggle areas that weren't pointed out or were maybe a one-liner in the report that haven't really been addressed? So for the African agenda, it's talking about integration and development within Africa. But the question of the African Renaissance and Pan-Africanism really needs to be understood. What are we looking for when we say integration? Because you'll see in the African agenda, there's still a lot of focus on sovereignty. And if you're focusing on sovereignty, how do we consolidate that with this African integration? Perhaps we need to start thinking, what do we mean by integration, and how are we going to convey this Pan-Africanism, these African Renaissance revival of Africa as an actor internationally, with elements that Africa holds very dear, such as sovereignty. There's also a lot of stretch capacity affecting South Africa in terms of promoting peace and security. We listed all the areas that we have peacekeeping forces, whether it's in South Sudan, whether it's in DRC. There's actually limited support in terms of financial training capacity on the ground to continue that. We are stretched. So how can that, as positive as it is, it's how do we build in terms of promoting peace and security? As you said, most of the conflict areas are in Africa. They've now built this relationship between the AU and the UN. But what does that mean now for capacity? There's also uneven levels of development and imbalance. South Africa still remains the dominant economic player on the continent, and we have that imbalance in terms of trade. We are one of the biggest exporters into Africa. We are also one of the biggest foreign direct investors into Africa. And with that comes challenges to our foreign policy from countries abroad through the perspective of perhaps how our businesses engage, how we conduct ourselves in terms of foreign direct investment. And then we have bottlenecks in infrastructure development. As much as there's a focus on infrastructure, it's again probably down to capacity that we have, capacity in terms of human resources, financial resources, we have bottlenecks. I think Messina and Brightbridge have been on the radar for quite a while in terms of speeding up processes. Freight trucks are sitting there about 5 days old. How do you transport fresh produce, refrigerated trucks? So there's still these bottlenecks that are inhibiting this infrastructure development despite a focus on it. South Africa operation, and here I say we have a potential for a spaghetti bowl effect that we're now part of. IPSA, we're part of BRICS, we're part of BASIC, we're part of NAM, we're part of... There's all these different organizations that have been highlighted positive for South Africa operation. But what does it mean for our capacity? That we are then all part of these many different organizations. The plus is that we are part of it, so we have a voice at the table. The downside is, how can we maintain it? Maybe there needs to be a strategic engagement on these various areas. I highlighted earlier loss of momentum on the IPFA, the Indian Brazil South Africa partnership. The challenge of capacity in South cooperation, and more focus on aligning political and economic strategy. So there's a lot of emphasis on trade and going after engaging on trade with countries, but what about the politics? What about the principles, human rights, democracy? How do we align those with countries in the South that may not always have good trade relations? But there's questions around the political stuff. And here in particular, it's areas that it's kind of under the radar. The Central Asian countries, we have increased relations with Kazakhstan, for example, which has not got the best human rights, democracy principles. A lot of the regions in Central Asia don't. But we have a growing engagement with them. I know SACL has just recently opened up a plant in Kazakhstan. And there's been a lot of engagement between Deputy Minister Ibrahim and the Central Asian area. What does that mean? North-South dialogue, building the focus here is on partnership, to change that balance so that we are partners rather than receiver and giver of state, receiver of state. And there, the fact that the focus was on the EU, the question is, what about the rest of the North? The North is very heterogeneous. We have countries from the Scandinavian countries, Eastern Europe countries. North America is very different between Canada and the U.S. And how are we managing those different relationships with the different areas? And then, of course, the impact of the decision to stop aid for South Africa. In particular, I'm talking about the role of the U.K., the decision to phase out aid by 2015. What does that mean for South Africa on the ground? How is our relationship with these developed countries of the OECD? And that isn't really discussed at any length in the annual report either. Global governance, although we achieved the resolution 2033, UN reform still remains a question. How is South Africa pushing that? What is our role in the Ezulwini consensus, which is an African consensus on how we would like to see reform
take place and what reform we would like to see. But the Israeli consensus is very rigid in its descriptions and hasn't fed in to the reform process very much. And there have been calls that there be something put on the agenda for UN reform, something solid within the course of the next few years that we can meet. And then questions of representation in small clubs. So we're part of the G20, but it's restricted in numbers. So we are the only African representative, but we call for inclusion, we call for integration, we call for universality. But we put up these small clubs that exclude a lot of countries, whether it's the G20, whether it's BRICS. How do you balance South Africa's priorities and position for democracy in international relations and engagement with participation in these relatively small clubs? And Dickel will say, you know, at least we have representation at the table. And we can represent an Africa position, but it sits uneasily with us. It was very awkward going. I was invited to the Civil Society 20 meeting in Russia before the G20. And when you sit there and you're the only representatives from Africa, it's very awkward and uneasy to ensure that the voice is heard. And there was a lot of preoccupation with European issues, the financial crisis, the Eurozone collapse, and not on Africa. So to get those positions heard and put forward was key. Then Durko, you will see in the report, there's lots of we hosted a seminar on or we attended a meeting on. But what is it, how do you measure this qualitative performance? If you have a meeting, how do you measure outcomes? It's quite difficult in providing that linkage. We did this and we achieved this. But if you host anything on BRICS or you're setting up a think tank on BRICS, how do you measure the impact on our domestic politics? So there's a lot of mostly listing of meetings as opposed to what will come to later. What are the implications for us as South Africans of these meetings? We had a meeting on BRICS, so what? What are the implications for the people on the ground? And that doesn't come out in the measures. There's a growing role of paradiplomacy in the role of paradiplomacy. And that is the role of non-traditional diplomatic actors. And one of our research areas is parliamentary diplomacy that we're working on. But there's a lot of cities have international relations people, provinces have international relations people. There's a lot of businesses that are out there engaging. But there's no formal, there's no training given to these people. Are businesses aware of South Africa's foreign policy principles? What are the training given to the city representatives that are out there engaging internationally? I think there was an embarrassing situation where it was in Shanghai and the representative in China phoned back and said we've got about two different cities being represented here at the same time. You know, there was very little coordination between the different levels of these actors that are engaging in diplomacy. Financial pressure, the changing exchange rates, the financial crisis that stretched capacity budgets within Durko are putting a pressure on the institute to be the organization to be able to perform the functions. You'll see in the report that it's desperately in need of updating its information communication technology. And this is one of the areas of performance that's not achieved. It hasn't managed to keep up with the ICT progress that should be made. Language training is also need more of a focus, especially in engaging with Francophone Africa. engaging with our Latin American partners in Spanish. This is another area that needs to, that is being beefed up and continued. Interpretation skills has been identified as an important area for diplomatic engagement. And we found a lot of like Russian specialists who specialize, for example, in East Africa. They all can speak Swahili. So there needs to be more engagement on language training. Then the South African Council on International Relations. That has been underway for about, coming up must be a year, 2 years now, where adverts went out for members to join this council. And it's only just this has gone out to members that have been appointed to bring it together. But again, how is this going to feed in to the foreign affairs process? It's still not entirely clear, but I suppose time will tell when the council is up and running. And then training for diplomacy. A lot of focus on economic diplomacy. And this is necessary, I suppose, because DTI has actually withdrawn a lot of its economic specialists from various missions. They've downscaled it. So our diplomats are having to be trained, not just generalists. In the past, you could get away with being a generalist as a diplomat. Now you've got to be trained in economic diplomacy. But it kind of overshadows other areas that perhaps need attention. And we need skills, especially in natural resource governance, is the upcoming, again, specialized, very technical. Finance, health. There's a lot of areas that diplomats need to be aware of to engage abroad on these issues in promoting South Africa. So these are some of the challenges that I've highlighted that weren't really addressed within the annual report. But I've also highlighted some areas for further consideration. Again, picking it up from maybe just one line, this is going forward, this is long-term thinking. We're dealing with these, we've achieved this, what are going to be the future issues? And here the South-South cooperation is the Indian Ocean Rim, Indonesia, Malaysia, the Pacific. And you'll find that the U.S. has done a lot of, is increasingly focusing on this area. And we're still playing catch-up. But this is an area that's developing and it's something that we need to give attention to. And then along, again, the civics. This is Colombia, India, Indonesia, Venezuela, Egypt, and South Africa. This is the other emerging countries. But you'll see South Africa is listed again, as with BRICS, as with BASIC. So we come back to the caution of our spaghetti ball of organizations that we're part of. But paying attention to these other emerging powers. The North-South partnership, the African-American Trade Initiative, AGOA, it comes to an end, well, it comes up for negotiation and needs to be revised by 2015. And the Americans are hesitant to include South Africa because of our more emerging sense that we should benefit, get the same benefits as a country like Malawi or Zambia. So this growth and opportunity, this African Growth and Opportunity Act, it's something that we need to be looking at as negotiations start to pick up momentum for 2015, that South Africa can still benefit from trade relations. So a key area that's up and coming. Global governance. We've now been elected to the United Nations Economic and Social Council. And it's at a time where the world is renegotiating the future of the Millennium Development Goals. Again, and something else that culminates in 2015. And we are now strategically placed on ECOSOC at the time these negotiations are taking place. So what is South Africa doing in terms of its negotiations for the post-2015 development agenda? What positions are we pushing? We need to sort of to highlight where we're going, what our positions are. I believe talks are underway to develop an African common position. This will be, it's going to gather steam as we head towards 2015. Then space and technology development. is an area, again, not addressed in the annual review, but something that South Africa has had achievements in, if we look at the Square Kilometre Array, the SKA, in space technology, the technology development in general, the fear that there's a growing gap between developed and developing countries in terms of technology, that means we get left behind. We're still running on old technologies, outdated. Where are we going? Climate change, sustainable development, and in particular energy. When we went through the political and economic cooperation, all those countries and areas that were listed, most of them, there were discussions or negotiations listed energy. Whenever we have a binational meeting or a bilateral commitment, energy comes up. But there's no foreign policy engagement as such or priority focus on energy. Climate change and sustainable development, again, particularly important for Africa, South Africa, as the most vulnerable continent worldwide. Without the capacity, we don't have the money to adapt. So to buy drought-resistant seeds or to build the ocean barriers or water barriers. There's still discussions going on linked to technology, linked to financing going forward. Then Zirko, areas for consideration. This is one of the areas that highlighted that they didn't achieve was ICT. But it's about... I don't know how much research that they've done into methods of new diplomacy. Diplomacy changes. It's not stagnant. And you look at some of the smaller states, like New Zealand. They are able to do so much with limited resources. How do they do that? What diplomatic practices are changing, especially linked to communications and technology? And then how can we harness that? How can we harness the technology? How can we harness these new practices that our financial budgets are then maybe not so strained? And I think there needs to be more depth and research in these areas to move forward. And this is something that the National Development Plan pointed out. There needs to be this research. And one of the areas I think would be this. Then the SADPA, the South African Development Partnership Agency, I think it was discussed in 2009 and is waiting to be operationalized. I see that the advent for jobs and posts have gone out, so there has been progress. But SADPA takes over from the African Renaissance Fund. What is the role for Parliament in SADPA and oversight of a financial body where we are giving development assistance to other countries? And nowhere in the African Renaissance Fund or in the annual review is the role of Parliament as oversight of something that is very financially focused highlighted. What are the accounting mechanisms for this? There's also not been a lot of research of the development cooperation. There's two sides. There's multilateral development cooperation and trilateral development cooperation. But what does either of these mean for South African foreign policy? How does it fit in with our constitution, the different principles? And the first development agency, they have an open briefing or leaflet that sets out, this is what we do, this is what we want to achieve, this is how much we give and where we give it. So there needs to be that transparency for general consumption that the public can see. And the public are actually quite supportive of SADPA. There was a recent study of South African, ordinary perspectives of South Africans on foreign policy. They were quite supportive of the importance to help with assistance, development assistance countries in Africa and further afield. So it's an area that has, I call it, for me, development cooperation is almost a human face of foreign policy, because you can engage with people at a grassroots level. It has such implications for South Africa's soft power, you take the position, perspective of external people, how they perceive us because they've been assisted through South African Development Cooperation. And then the South African Council on International Relations, again, not achieved, but when it is constituted, how is it going to engage with DIRCO, with Parliament, with the various research organizations and NGOs? And finally, and there has, I mean, the government must be commended, but there has been a lot of focus on domestic foreign policy linkages. And under President Zuma, right from the start of his term, the effort to have the domestic foreign policy link has been very visible. And the DIRCO has done a number of roadshows, engagements with stakeholders, in building up an understanding of South African foreign policy. The problem for me for this is that there's not been much translation of achievements internationally and the benefits locally. And this is what I was saying earlier. We have a meeting with BRICS. What does it mean for people? Why is it not reported in here that we had a meeting with BRICS, which had a trade council, which saw so much business engagement with these companies? Or we had so much foreign direct investment for this meeting? Or because we were hosting an expo in China, the impact on tourism increased. The foreign policy achievements haven't been translated into domestic implications. And for me, that's still something of a gap. And then a deep understanding and application of public diplomacy. DIRCO had a public diplomacy branch. It mainly focuses on, in the report it says, we did 373 media briefings. But that's not public diplomacy, that's marketing. What is engagement? What is public diplomacy? And I think it's been somewhat missed, as public diplomacy seems to be more marketing department with a different title. So it's something to be built on. I think it also has one of the smallest budgets, but it's potentially the area that can have one of the biggest impacts when it comes to soft power and promoting the principles of foreign policy, of our constitution, and involving these linkages that I've said between domestic and foreign policy. So I hope that was a very quick tour of quite an extensive report, and then if you have any questions or comments, I'm happy to try and answer them for you. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot for the, I think it was quite helpful. First thing, I think if we can just get the electronic version circulated to members so that they can use data for reference. We have taken notes as you were making, but it's easier when they have a document, something that they can go back and look at cross-checking with the annual report to make sure that they've got. Members, let me just open for hands for clarity and engagement. Okay, I think it's three hands.
Thank you, Chair. I actually must appreciate the research that's done, but I want to know, in terms of foreign policy development achievements, you did say that it's not reported. If we're talking about empirical evidences in terms of what really translates into development for all people. I also want to talk about, you talk about lack of coordination in terms of diplomacy. What does your research suggest in terms of this coordination, and where are the gaps that we can actually detect? I also want to perhaps comment on SAGE, COMESA, and ECOWAS. In terms of your research, you've actually highlighted the decrease in exports. Has your research actually listed the positive and the negative indicators, as we might want to look at that as a point of discussion? And then I also want to, you know, it always bothers me in terms of, you said that the aid word is replaced by development cooperation. Okay, I'll for a moment use that in terms of the donor countries being, committed. In terms of the commitment, there's sometimes some they renegade on that donor funding. Is there any research done on that
particular thing where donor countries actually dishonor sometimes their commitments. I also perhaps want to say my last thing is, you said something about we being outstretched in capacity, and I also believe that we do, in terms of peace and security, our peace and security efforts. If we overstretched or outstretched, how do you see us actually becoming more effective without having to hammer our own systematic and approach towards peace and security in the region particularly? I lastly want to say that in terms of Middle East, you didn't say nothing about relations with regard to our, because I think you talked about the Indian Ocean Rim, but in terms of the Middle East, I heard nothing about that. What is your view in terms of our, because I think it's a very important area where we should actually put some concentration. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Mohammed. Honorable,
Sorry, just short. Something that worries me all the time. We belong to all clubs and membership to so many organizations. And we, as doing oversight, we don't see anything that's coming from that. It's just like a boy club or men's club or some organization that you don't know what's going on. The money's going there, they're having nice lunches, and nothing is coming out of it. And all the, as you call it, a spaghetti organization. There are so many organizations that we belong to that is standing for exactly the same reason. But we don't connect our ties in the beginning, and we've got no ties at the end that we can get together. So that is the two things that worry me a lot, because there must be some consolidation that we can at least, we've got so many organizations that we combine to India, for instance, 3-4, or America, or whatever. There must be a combination, because we're spending a lot of money for the same reason, but we're climbing the mountain from different sides and we'll never get to the top. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Let me also join my colleagues in appreciating the briefing. I think it's quite an informative summary, really, to enable us to look at the entire report of the department. I'll make one or two comments and perhaps questions if possible. Because I take your organization as an organization which is looking from the outside, looking into what we are doing as the practitioners of diplomacy in the government. Now, the first area that you mentioned was the changing geopolitical dynamics in the international system. And then I think some would mention then the rise of Japan, the rise of China, the rise of India, the rise of Russia. Then on the contrary, then you have some saying the decline of the U.S. Now I'd like to know what would be the implications of that, because here at home, we also seem to have these parallel approaches. Trade has its way of dealing with the international issue, and the political diplomacy has also its own way of dealing with that. But there are implications to what you have just said. And you did mention the reluctance of some of the African regions to work together. Perhaps one say it is because of the political sovereignty that they don't want to lose that. But I'm not quite sure about the economic sovereignty, whether they would mind losing that because they would like economic development. Now, which one could be then be used to pull the other one in? We know that Nkrumah put in the politics test into it. When he spoke about the politics first and then everything will follow, then people misconstrued what he said, and in fact he was simply putting a condition on that. So I don't know, your organization might help us to see how do we encourage the African countries now to work together with these two streams. The other point is the issue of development. We mentioned development, cooperation, economic development, developmental state, development aid, but I don't think we have really grasped the concept of development itself. Where do we start? It's like the issue of national interest. Even in the report, I know at some point they do admit that the issue of national interest has never been really discussed to a point where we had a consensus. The other point is on the North-South relations. You mentioned only the EU there, our relations with the EU. I'm not quite sure where do you place the U.S. in this equation. The point I also want to make is on the Security Council. I know we are talking about the transformation of the Security Council and other international bodies, IMF and so on. But I don't know how realistic are we, I know we need to fight that battle, but how realistic are we, if you look at the Security Council as an expression of the national interests of the powerful nations. This is a forum where the powerful nations express their own national interests. Are they going to move from their position readily? I know we are trying to reform, but transformation is quite different from reform. If we are realistic, how realistic are we? Then, as I said, you're looking from outside into what we are doing. We have also embarking on this process of international relations. The international system, like everybody else, every country is embarking on that. But we have said that we are looking at a better Africa, and we're also looking at a better world. Now, somebody who is looking from outside may have to tell us that 2 years later, where are we? Are we close to getting a better Africa? Are we close to getting a better world? When you see what is happening in the Middle East, in Syria, in the DRC and so on, are we close to getting a better Africa? The IPSA you just sketched and said there's a lot of momentum there. I think generally we can also sense that. But I think as politicians, members of parliament, we're not quite aware why there is now a loss of momentum. Whether BRICS is eclipsing this, what is the reason for this loss of momentum? Now, the specialized training, you did say that, which is true, that now you don't need the world generalist type of diplomat. Somebody must now specialize. Now my question is, what's going to happen to the very old, visionary, prudent, charismatic diplomatist whose work really is more than just working within the host country, but trying to stretch throughout the region and either in a way of making peace? Or what would happen to that type of person, types of Martinique and the others? Agua, I'm ending now. Agua, I don't know. I'm not sure whether your organization sees us going into a dialogue with it. I've heard several issues about it. Some are saying, let's continue. Others are saying, no, let's review. But I think the country needs a dialogue. Not only South Africa, but we need to have the other African countries into it. Then we should have an amended version of what... I know even the Americans are beginning to want to review some aspect of it. My last point is what you made on the effect on the domestic scene. It is true, I think we've discussed this even in the committee, that we have trade agreements, international trade agreements and so on, which impact on what is happening in South Africa, the domestic scene. But I do not think we have an effective program of saying, telling the people themselves to say that this kind of agreement is going to impact on society in this manner and so on. And I'm afraid if we don't move in the direction where the people can become the sole owners of the economic and political sovereignty, then we may end up losing those which I think are the fundamentals of a state. Thank you, ma'am.
I think we need to take cognizance. Certain discussions will have obviously to take them up with the department, but it's nice to have a perspective from an outside giving us all of the things and discussing. It was quite interesting to listen to the former UN Secretary General Kofi Annan when he spoke on the issue of the Security Council. And I think he wrote an article, I saw one article, where he was speaking about trying to balance between the transformation or the reform, whatever it's called. But he was emphasizing you can't have so many countries, and he was highlighting the population of each country. Well, just by talking about India and other countries, how we have the population in Africa, but we don't have permanent seats in the council. And what I think helped us is it was more to remove from the issue of we want transformation because people are appearing from African point of view. But we want transformation of that institution to be more representative of what the world looks like today. And I think he really gave some perspective. And from where I saw even the documents from the department, I think it will be good to engage the department as well further on the matter. Because I saw some statements where they were saying, look, we want to see the issue of somebody who was leaking or something, whether it's true or not. But it was an issue that you'd want to see the transformation, but you don't want nothing to happen because you might end up with chaos. There must be some system that assists. If we are, when the debate started, are we pulling out of UN as Africa as a group or the Security Council? And if we should take that decision, what do we have in place as a mechanism to protect, you know, and make sure that there's law and order? I that's something, certain things quite honestly, quite fairly, how you phrase them. They really need us to really discuss and debate further and get a sense of who we are. And one of the concerns really from where I'm sitting, even beyond the department, is how as South Africa and how the media in South Africa projected themselves, you know, about international relations. All you see, even how they report, a glimpse of the president's address, you hardly even see the address of what the president has said. If you are lucky, a very few times, unless you go to the presidency's website and download the full statement, the country does not even get reported on what the issues the president has raised. For example, when you give podium at UN. And whereas when you see you go to other African countries, it's very different. People get to be told this is what the president has raised because it's known to be the issues that are affecting people of South Africa, of that particular country. So I think one of the things is to say maybe, for example, as we engage, how do we try and make sure broadly as a South African society, and there are very few people who understand the issues of international relations and its impact and its importance. So they define sometimes people argue, why do we send troops? Why? Because it's not because they don't want troops, but it's the lack of understanding of why it is important to have a peaceful continent. Because if it doesn't, we can have a spillage to us. You know those things. And I think the quite tough issues have been raised here with assist us in engaging even with the report. I think we really appreciate. Maybe let me just give you to respond to some of the issues. I think you've really been quite helpful in provoking our thoughts on the report to make sure that we really go beyond the institution of what we have here.
Thank you. I'll try and respond to some of the questions. I've got a list of pages.
it's part of our process because we've got to be preparing ourselves for next week. So it's part of the process. While colleagues are speaking, they're assisting all of us to really start thinking beyond one. Go back and re-prepare. Be helping us. So you don't have to feel pressured to answer everything. Answer when you are able to provide some responses.
Thank you very much. Yes, I think that's the key point raised, is the lack of empirical evidence and outcomes. The point that the other honourable member also raised is what are the implications. We're part of so many of these organisations, but what does it mean? We need that coordination and there to be outcomes from this. So if we are, and maybe that's where the DIRCA multilateral branch can come in and create a coordinated strategy that has outcomes. If we are members of BRIC, if we are members of BASIC, if we are members of IPSA, and now CIVIT and Indian Ocean Rim, and what are we getting out of it? What is the strategy? What is the strategic thinking behind this? And that's the point that you raised, and I think it's necessary in going forward. And that's the problem with these binational commissions and bilateral agreements. We go ahead and we sign, and then what? Then get filed. So there's what is the follow through and the implications of the commitments and how they're impacting directly on South Africans for us. In terms of the gaps in policy and diplomacy coordination, yes, I think this is a big problem and something that the Institute for Global Dialogue is a project that we are want to undertake to support this. That we put together a framework which clearly sets out for people engaged in international relations. This is South African foreign policy. These are the protocols and procedures. These are our strategies, aims, negotiations. And so that provinces, cities, businesses engaged in this, parliament also, that everybody can have sort of a standard framework or toolkit that you can refer to quickly to get a quick understanding. You don't need to be encumbered with details, but you need to know what South African foreign policy is, what are the procedures. If you as an official from a city are going to visit another city, how do you let DIRCA know? What are the formal panels? Things like that. And that, I think, is something that needs to be addressed, the gap that you highlighted. And it's going to take a bit of time to so discoordinated now that it's going to take time to figure out who should be doing what, where, and how it's working. But key points that I think you raised. On the economic development cooperation, this is really becoming a key area in foreign policy, especially as South Africa is now itself a donor. Let's use the old terms. South Africa has become a donor. And we are part of these multilateral negotiations on aid and aid effectiveness, and we also work with other partners in trilateral cooperation and the development of SAPA, the South African Development Partnership. And what I can maybe offer is we've done a work on this, research work on it, and we can offer to come and do maybe a session with yourselves, setting out what it is, why it's important, the linkages to foreign policy and the constitution. Of development coordination, where it comes from, and where it's going internationally. And that's a suggestion I put on the table for you, that we can do that. The national interest is something it does need to be defined, I think. And the Minister of Foreign Affairs has gone some way to do it. I actually found a statement of hers, I think it was in one of her outreach tours to a university, where she listed the national interest elements, and I'd be happy to forward that section to you. And she highlights about five elements, but again, that needs to be expanded on and linked back to the focus areas of foreign policy, but I can share that with you from that particular statement. The UN Security Council, will it ever be reformed? The politics of the Security Council, and I think South Africa's first term, it was a bit of a wake-up call to the dynamics within the council, that you've got within the P5, you've got the P3, France, the UK, and the US, which play their own game, compared to Russia and China, which play a different game. But for South Africa, it was kind of jumping on a train that's going at 160 km an hour, because this is an institution that's been running for such a long time, and these players have been at the center for such a long time that they play these political dynamics, and we there for 2 years. They call us tourists at the UN Security Council. But this is a serious issue for reform, and it can be. They won't. The Security Council of Permanent Five will not give up the veto. And we hear in the corridors that they actually use the threat of the veto more in getting agreements than actually the veto itself. So there needs to be serious discussion on this reform, expanding as well as the expansion of the veto. But this is going to be a difficult, long process. But it's something that can be achieved because we have the General Assembly, and Africa makes up the bulk of the members of the General Assembly. I think it makes up about one-third. So there's that opportunity to build capacity or build a base within a General Assembly to push forward issues. And although the Security Council makes the final decision, they can't ignore the General Assembly. So there needs to be perhaps more momentum in building an Africa consensus and engaging with like-minded states on reform and getting something together that can be. And I believe Kofi Annan is championing that. Are we getting close to a better Africa, a better world? I think Africa has definitely proved the critics wrong. The economist that was 15 years ago said the dark continent, and this year they said the rising continent, the continent of hope. So it shows that there's definite change, and it's a question of there's areas where there's been a lot of achievement, and sometimes it's overshadowed by areas, you know, bad news is always attracts the attention, but there has been areas of achievement, and particularly it's making sure that it's not one step forward, two steps back, so that we focus, and South Africa has played in the annual report in democracy promotion, human rights promotion, that you need to have development to move people forward. So I think it is a better Africa, but it's about making sure that we keep moving forward, particularly highlighting those important areas where there is the opportunity to slip back, and to give up all that hard work in getting to where we are today. And the Middle East, it wasn't raised, and I don't think that there was much said in annual reports on it either. But it's South Africa's position, because of the turbulence, because of the changes, it's been very difficult to engage. And there was an incident where South Africa offered mediation services to the Egyptians, and the Egyptians laughed at us. I think that the retort was that you haven't even resolved your own reconciliation, why would we take advice from you? Which is a bit of a setback for relations, I think. The other problem we have is that South Africa, we see North Africa as part of Africa, but if you look at how the Americans divide up their foreign service and how a lot of the Europeans divide up their foreign service, they see sub-Saharan Africa, and then they have a North Africa Middle East desk. So they've divided the continent in their minds, in their thinking. And we have to be careful, South Africans and South Africa, that we don't feel like we see Africa as Africa, and that we engage with them at that level, and that we don't fall into this division of how we see the world. But Middle East has been a difficult area for South Africa engagement, with the uprisings And I think you're probably right. There needs to be a strategic thinking on how we engage with this transformation, because in situations of flux, often offer the most opportunity in going forward. Why the loss of momentum on EFSA? I think it's something to do with the political visibility of BRICS. The lack of focus on EFSA. Because EFSA is doing, because it has a secretariat, because it has projects, because it has a fund, it is actually working, it's making changes. But these haven't really been advertised. They haven't been highlighted. It's almost as though there's so much focus on BRICS that people have been busy that side and forgotten what's going on this side. And maybe it's just a question of addressing, look what EFSA is doing. Because for many people, EFSA is actually can do more than BRICS because it is a grouping of like-minded states of democracies, non-permanent representatives on the UN Security Council. With BRICS, you've got China and Russia on the one side, questionable democratic systems. With EFSA, you have these emerging countries that have similar base, a similar understanding, and can be used more. Specialist versus generalist. This is going to be a challenge in looking at the new diplomacy and how we manage diplomatic relations, because we will need the generalists. Nowadays, if you've got a briefcase with a satellite phone, you can set a virtual embassy or a moving embassy anywhere in the world. So you will need the generalist to be able to deal with the political issues. So maybe then looking at having a generalist overseeing, but then having specialists underneath that can deal with the rising issues of the day, the transnational issues. So somebody on economics, somebody on climate change, somebody on... Because the international relations field is so vast, it's very difficult to maintain that focus on the technical... And on climate change, you can string an entire sentence together with acronyms. So to be able to engage meaningfully on this, you have to have that level of specialization. But to give up the generalists, I think, would be asking for trouble. You need somebody to be able to oversee the political understanding of that. So no, it's not a death knell for the generalists. And I think you're 100% right on the need for dialogue on AGOA. And this is why I raised it, is because it's an issue area that's coming, and it's going to build steam quite quickly as we head to 2015. So there's a need to be prepared for this, to understand what have we achieved under AGOA, and how is the best way to take it forward. So I hope that's answered.
Thank you very much. I'm just going to give Musala the part of that, just to make some few inputs on areas that she says that needs attention.
Thank you, Chairperson. Some of the issues Leslie Lafras has already touched upon. There's also the issue of asset register, which the committee has been discussing with the department for a longer time. This issue has again surfaced in the annual report in terms of still there are challenges with the asset in terms of them being able to reconcile the number of properties abroad with the support that we have here at headquarters. And that has been attributed mainly because of the ICT problem which has come up compared to. So they need to balance ICT technology. It should be operational so that they're able to reconcile in time and also accurately what assets the department has. Other than that, the issue of the organizational structure, where the LEP document has advised, much as DEP has features in the missions and also in terms of there is a need for aligning capacity to the mandate of the department. So this issue needs to be also anticipated. The increase in interpretation is another one. At the moment, the South African mission grew from 34 to 125 worldwide by now. So this brings about challenges of cost, of course,
and also smart operation, which between headquarters and the mission. So this is another issue which maybe the committee should look at and assist the department in terms of how they should maybe apply, you know, strategy should be, strategic thinking should be the sector when talking about representation or expanding representation across the globe. Public diplomacy was touched upon, and indeed it's still in my thinking, and they need to actually expand it to cover both audiences, nationally and internationally, because elite diplomacy, which is currently happening where diplomats at their level are able to talk to one another or talk to the media, there's public diplomacy, the actual public diplomacy, where you need to talk to the people on the ground to understand the issue and be able to, you know, to contribute and also even to support the positions that you take internationally. So that inward kind of thinking still exists. It's still something that the community needs to look at. ROSA, the registration of South Africans abroad, it's still a bit of a challenge. Maybe the department needs to have more marketing strategy, something else which they can use in order for South Africans to be made aware that when they travel abroad, it is important to register. We have just seen the Westgate Mall incident in Kenya. There is a South African who was unfortunately killed. It's important for people to know that when they travel, they need to make their whereabouts. So whether we use maybe South African Airways, whether we use our own national airports, but there must be some ways where people get information. And the ARF, I think members will wait for presentation by the AG next week, where he highlighted some financial management issues there that can be discussed. Yes. I think Chapter 70 for some of the issues.
Thank you very much for that. The document is sent to the security members as well. We've got this one. The one that the content advisor is sent to. They've done a comprehensive document that sort of gives us just an analysis. And as you say, that a number of issues have been raised by Dr. Nassau. And she's just flagging some of the issues that were not raised before for us to look at. I don't know if there's any other comments, members. On that note, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Dr. Master, for coming and sharing because it's really helpful to say from an outside person who's doing focus on the work. Really appreciate it for coming here. Honorable members, on that note, thank you very much for the opportunity. We'll see each other next week, Wednesday. Thanks a lot.
How are you?
I'm not. I was told that the only thing from the